Garrus is a fascinating concept. It is a complex area of halacha with great significance and very important impact on our communal life, on our national life, and on the lives of individuals. It's an issue of great weight, of great sensitivity, and of tremendous importance, both in terms of what it requires us to do, but also in terms of what it says about the Jewish people as a nation, and what it says about our values, and how we relate to ourselves. So, as a matter of introduction, we need to try to get a little bit of perspective on where Garrus fits in, and how we relate to Garrus. And it's important first to start off by noting that we are all Garim, that however we were born, whatever the circumstances of our birth, but Garrus is how it all started. Garrus is the beginning of the Jewish people, and the history of Garrus is a little unclear, because it seems like Garrus exists throughout the Torah, including the earlier parts of our history. There is a very significant literature, which we're not going to spend a lot of time on, but there's a lot written. There's a lot about the question of, when does Judaism begin? When does the Jewish people start? Do we assume that the Jewish people start at Har Sinai, and before that we don't have Jews? With all due respect to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and of course we have tremendous respect, my great-great-grandparents, so I want to be very careful, and we have a lot of Hakar Satov for all that they have done for us, but they may not have been Jewish. That's a question that Achronim try to figure out. Does Judaism start only at Har Sinai, or was there Judaism beforehand? Were Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, were they Jewish? So this is a question, if you want to follow up. It's discussed at great length. The two of the sources that talk about it in most detail is, on the one hand, the Drushos of the Mishnah LeMelech, the one who wrote the Mishnah LeMelech, and the Rambam has a sefer of Drushos called the Parashas Drachim, where he has two long essays about this. And Rav Yosef Engel, who we'll be referring to from time to time today in a few other contexts, Rav Yosef Engel, in a sefer Beis HaOtzar, it's a halachic lumdish encyclopedia. So if you look up Avos, so he has extensive discussions there about Avos, Kodeh Matan Torah, were they Jewish or not? So that's one question. How exactly do we relate to the status of the Avos? And you might say, okay, well, it doesn't really matter nowadays. I'm not going to question whether Yitzchak counts for a minion. It's not going to come on the benching with Yaakov. It's not going to involve so many practical ramifications. But you'll see that it actually comes up a lot, that when we try to figure things out based on Gemaras, based on Psukim, so the question of, do we assume that the conduct of the Avos reflects practical halacha, and also what does it say about how you become Jewish, is something that is drawn upon a lot. So the historical question of the status of the Avos, you'll find that much of the literature does draw upon this question, and it's something that will come up from time to time. But we also know that Avram was involved in what looks like Garrus, because the Torah refers to Es HaNefesh Asher Asu B'Charan, the souls that were created, the souls that were made, maybe it's a better translation, we'll come back to that in a few minutes, that the tradition has it that Avram and Sarah were involved in creating Gerim, were involved in the act of conversion. So that prompts the question, so what were they converting them to? Was there a Judaism? If we're not even sure if Avram was Jewish, we're not even sure if Yitzchak was Jewish. So what does it mean that Avram and Sarah were converting people? What were they converting them to? And if they were indeed Jewish, so how come we assume that the line of Judaism goes through Avram? So what about all these other people who were brought on board by Avram and Sarah? Where are their descendants? So it seems that the conversion that we're talking about there is not the full gerus that we refer to today, which is a gerus into Judaism. But as many understand it, it was a gerus to what you could call, has been referred to as ethical monotheism. That Avram was spreading not Judaism per se, but the idea that there is one God, as opposed to Avodah Zarah, as opposed to polytheism, and that there were demands of behavior that come along with that recognition. So a belief in one God, and that there are rules, that there are standards, that you have to act a certain way, it's ethical monotheism, that's what Avram was bringing about. Some understand this. Rabbi Chanan has a comment in the Kovet Shiurim that essentially this is what we call a Ger Toshav. That the concept of a Ger Toshav, it's a little bit of a discussion what exactly are the rules of being a Ger Toshav, but a Ger Toshav, as we understand it for our purposes right now, is referring to somebody who's not actually Jewish, but is committing himself to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, to abandon idolatry, and take on the seven commandments of the code of Noahides, of the entire world population. Even though, you would say, you don't need anything in order to be committed to the Zion Mitzvahs, that's obligatory on the whole world anyway. All of society is obligated in the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. But somebody who formally commits to it and who takes upon a life that's going to honor these rules is understood to be a Ger Toshav, and it could be that there's more to it. So we have sources that indicate that a Ger Toshav is on some level a Geirus, is on some level a conversion, even though it doesn't necessarily entail anything beyond what they would have been obligated already, but being committed to such a behavior is considered to be a type of Geirus as well. Moshe?
Yeah, I just had a question. Why do we call the ger who, or the non-Jew that observes the Sheva Mitzvot, a ger toshav, when it seems that if they didn't commit to it, that we could kill them? Didn't it seem from the Rambam that we could kill them? And if they, it's like either you kill them or they're a ger toshav. There seems to be no
space in the middle.
Yeah.
Well, there is a space in the middle because somebody could observe the Zion Mitzvos and not necessarily have the full status of a Ger Toshav. And there is somewhat of a machlokas as to what exactly it takes to be a Ger Toshav and what exactly a level of commitment. So there is somewhat of a range discussion here. There's also a fascinating comment, not so widely appreciated, that if you look in the Mishneh Berurah in Siman Shin Dalet, where I should have actually put this on the Makaris list, the Bir Halacha, where he talks about the obligation of Shemira Shabbos on the whole household. So there he notes that a Ger Toshav theoretically could also take on more. That at the time of accepting his Ger Toshavness, he can take on other mitzvos beyond the Zion mitzvos. And that includes Shabbos, which is a big chiddush if you think about it, because we are familiar with the idea that only Jews are supposed to be observing Shabbos. It's something which has practical ramifications in Hilchos Geirus that we'll get to, God willing, later on. And here the Bir Halacha writes that that's assuming that he's only taking on the Zion Mitzvah, so then he shouldn't be observing Shabbos. But if at the time when he's Mekabel, the status of Ger Toshav, if he wants to take on Shabbos as well, then he's entitled. He wants to add on extra mitzvahs, it's all a part of it. So what exactly Geirus means before we get to full Judaism is an interesting question with a whole range of possibilities. So there's a lot of literature, and I'm happy to share with you, if you want, the Mar Makomos, where to explore the topic further, of Geirus Kodem Matan Torah, of what it meant to convert beforehand. And there are a few other references in addition to this whole very significant idea of HaNefesh Asher Asu B'charan, and that whole picture of what Avram and Sarah and his family were doing. So we find a few other references here and there. So the Gemara and Sota, two places near each other, and Daf Yud and Daf Yud Beis, the Gemara, just putting, I put one of them on the list just to give you a sense, that the Gemara talks in Sota first about Tamar, that Tamar, the story of Tihuda and Tamar, that Tamar identified herself as a Gioras. So apparently there was something to convert to. And also, Rashi tells us, interpreting the Gemara and Daf Yud Beis, that Bas Paro converted. And she went to be Tova in the river in order to convert. So the Brisker Rav points out, as seems evident, that you see that even before Matan Torah, there was a notion of people converting to something, of people taking on a status change through some type of conversion process. But we know that the big event of conversion in history is Matan Torah, which is part of why Shavuos, it's a popular topic to talk about conversion. We read Megillas Rus, but also we read about Matan Torah. Both of these very significant milestones in the history of Hilchos Geirus. So we have this tradition that all of Klal Yisrael essentially took on conversion. So if there was no Judaism before Matan Torah, that we're not sure about. But at Matan Torah, for sure, it begins at that point. And Klal Yisrael takes on the obligation and the nationhood, which is an important point that we will come to. They take on both the rules and the nationhood relationship of being Jewish. And the Gemara tells us in Krisus on Daf Tes, hopefully you got the chance to see this, and the Rambam in Hilchos Yisrei Bia expanding on this, that this is where we get the rules from. That how do we know what's involved in Geirus? We know that we look at the history of the Jewish people leading up to and including Matan Torah. So what's involved in Geirus, as far as we can see from there? And the Gemara quotes a pasuk. The pasuk is really the pasuk in Parsha Shlach, which is really coming from the context doesn't make it obvious this is what it's about, but there the Torah talks about the Ger having one status together with the rest of the Jewish people, and included in the Pasuk, in Pasuk Tezvav, and Parsha Shlach, so we find the language, Kachem Kager Yelefnei Hashem. So there's this linkage, like you and like the Ger. So the Gemara says over there in Krisus and Daf Tes, that means backwards, Kager Kachem, that the Ger is going through the same process as the entire Jewish people did. And the process of Geirus is derived from Har Sinai and that which leads up to Har Sinai. And we're told, and we'll go into all of these details, that'll be a part of our focus later on, that what is Geirus involved? So there the Gemara tells us three things, each one of which will be a topic, or at least some of them will be topics of major discussion down the line, that it involves miwa, at least for males. And so it involves circumcision, it involves tevila, you have to go to the mikvah, and it involves a korban. Now, nowadays, as the Gemara emphasizes, so we don't have korbanos, and one might think, okay, so then maybe we can't have geirus either, if we don't have korbanos, so then we're missing a part of the process. And the Gemara says, no, don't think that, looking to the same pasuk, so you have the language right before kachem kager, so the Torah says, l'doro seichem. And the Gemara understands that to mean that it's always got to be possible to have geirus. So were it to be tied into korbanos, l'ikuva, so then it wouldn't be possible when there's no Beis HaMikdash to have Geirus, and the Torah is telling us it's always possible. Now, we got to figure out what that means, because the Gemara also says there were times when we were more hesitant, and we're going to get into issues of being Mekabel Geirim based on circumstances soon. But at least theoretically, there has to always be the possibility of Geirus, and that is learned out from the Dor HaSeichem, which tells us that, which the Gemara understands to be telling us that the korban is not ma'akev, that you can have geirus without the korban. Tyler.
Yeah, where is the pasuk of Dor HaSeichem? Is that the same exact pasuk?
Same pasuk. Yeah, that's the word right before. Tesvav, tesvav. Okay, so yeah, the word right before kachem is l'dor HaSeichem. Jonathan.
I was wondering, the way that we explained Rashi before, so like there's this idea of years before, would the explanation be therefore that this idea of Avram I think you called it, was it called ethically monotheistic, or it's more, or basically we say when Rashi says Litzvol Sham Shein Geirus is more than that.
So that's the question. That's what's not clear. So what exactly could Geirus mean before there was a Jewish people is a subject of some extensive discussion. And it could mean that they are committing to essentially the Zion mitzvos, and therefore it's more just a question of the commitment rather than the actual rules, because the rules would have been the same. Or maybe it's a connection to the group of people who were descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov at that time. You know, we find also towards the end of Sefer Bereishis that there is an idea of being Yehudi, of being an Ivri, even before there is a Jewish nation. So there's a lot of debate as to what exactly that could possibly mean. And there are those who don't think that there's really a concept of Geirus as we understand it before Matan Torah, and that's what they have to deal with, these Rashis and these Gemaras, as the Brisker Rav points out. Sounds like there is a concept of Geirus, and leaving open that question of, at least it should mean ethical monotheism, but maybe it means more than that.
What does commitment and rules mean? Like, the rules would be bris milah? That mean, what exactly are commitments and rules then?
No, so that you're getting to the process, right? The process of Geirus, so may or may not mean that. And we'll talk about where exactly milah fits in. But
so
for...
I was saying to become Geir, I was saying because the only mitzvah, I'm thinking about the mitzvahs that are already given up until now. Meaning, if we have to say that it's right. Commitment and rules... what commitments and rules already exist?
So there may not be any. That's the question. So Mila was given to Avram Avinu. So that may be a part of his Geirus. That's also a part of the discussion, that if Avram did become Jewish, so when did he become Jewish? Did he become Jewish specifically then? Was he not Jewish until then? And only with the mitzvah of Mila he became Jewish? So we say that, and this is a part of the discussion that Rabbi Chanan has over there when he talks about Ger Toshav also, that perhaps Avram was mitzuva only in that mitzvah, and on top of the basic Bnei Noach mitzvos, and everything else came later. That's all a subject of a lot of debate, how exactly to understand that. Okay, so, but what we do know is that from Matan Torah, then for sure we have Geirus. The whole Jewish people come and convert, and after that, then it's possible for individuals to convert to that entity, to the Jewish nation and to the Jewish code of life. So the Gemara tells us that those three things are a part of the process: Mila for males, and Tefillah, and Korban. Korban nowadays we can't do, so it must be it's not crucial because we have to be able to have Geirim. And what's not mentioned there is Kabbalah HaMitzvos. Kabbalah HaMitzvos, I don't know if that was going to be your question, but Kabbalah HaMitzvos is a crucial controversy in the world of Geirus, which we will get to. And even though it's not explicitly mentioned here, it probably also is connected to the experience at Har Sinai, and that's something that we'll try to understand also. Moshe.
I was just thinking, is there the Gemara in Brachos that says that Tefillah was established with Makom Karbonos, is there any halachic implication that a Tefillah would take place of a Karbon, or we just, if there's no Karbonos today, then we just don't do it?
Yeah, we don't do it. We do have it in mind for the future, and that when there's a Beis HaMikdash, so the Ger should bring his Karbon then. And there's a discussion to be had. We'll talk about this when we talk about the components of Geirus as to what happens if he doesn't. So if the Gemara is telling us that the Karbon is not Ma'akev, so, okay, we understand. So now, today, it's impossible to bring a Karbon, and it has to be possible to have Geirus, so therefore the Karbon is not Ma'akev. But what if you do have a Beis HaMikdash, and the Geir didn't bring a Karbon? So what impact does that have? Is it still not Ma'akev, or is it Ma'akev only partially? So that's something we'll get to, God willing. It has limited nafgaminas for us today, but halavai, who knows, maybe before Shavuos B'Tammuz, maybe we'll have a Beis HaMikdash. God willing, it should have nafkamina soon, but at the moment that has limited nafkamina, but that's something that we'll see. But we don't necessarily see that we require that to be replaced, or that there really is a way to replace that for now. The role of tefillah in replacing karbonos is really addressing a different aspect. Hi, Ephraim.
Yeah, we also have the Indian of Neshama Parasvazinu.
Yes.
So what do you what about the carbon thing here?
Well, I think that's essentially Moshe's question. It's the same idea that the notion that tefillah replaces karbanos, so that replaces the avoda aspect, the idea that we interact with God through karbanos, and that there are certain daily karbanos that are supposed to be an expression of that. So tefillah is occupying that role. But when there is a specific korban that is an obligation for a life event, so we don't find that the tefillahs necessarily can fulfill that obligation. So, mimanav shach, if it's not going to fulfill the obligation completely, so then it's a question what some type of a tefillah would accomplish as far as that's concerned. So the regular daily korbanos, regular daily avoda, is addressed through a korban. To learn about the karbanos in general has a hashkafic way to it, but it's not going to get us out of the obligation. So the ger commits to bring your karban with the base of mikdash. Yoledus also has a commitment to, or also other types of karbanos. Somebody who's mechal Shabbos has to bring a chata. So we also have the notion that he should keep track and be ready to bring that karban in the future. But until then, so we exist without it. So we have these three elements from Har Sinai, and the major question of Kabbalas HaMitzvos, there's a lot to assume, also relates to Har Sinai, but that's not explicitly stated there, and we'll talk about that in its context. Rav Soloveitchik was quoted in the Sefer HaRei Kadem as explaining that there is a difference in the Geirus of Har Sinai and the Geirus of an individual. From that point on, that the Geirus of Har Sinai was a national Geirus. So it all took place at once, and it was something that could be imposed upon us because of our national identity, and as we'll discuss, certainly tomorrow and a little bit today as well, so a Geir coming today, we know, cannot be compelled to convert, and very far from it. We try to go in the opposite direction. We're certainly not compelling, and that's something that we'll talk about at length. But the Jewish people were all brought into this, whether they were ready or not, as a function of the history. And that may also impact things. We'll talk about it a little bit later. There is a concept, we'll probably talk about this towards the end, there's a concept of gerushin iskayer kekatan hanola dami, that when a individual converts, so then it's a new family context. There's no halachic relationship to the previous family. So whether that was true of the gerus of Har Sinai is a machlokas of the mafarshim. So you look in the Meshech Chachma and the Gurariye and others, the Maral, of whether that was the case, that all of the family members became disconnected to each other. It sounds like not. It sounds like they still were related to all their relatives. And it's, again, it's a little bit of a debate in the Mefarshim on Chumash for whatever relevance it has. And Rav Soloveitchik suggests that he's assuming that we don't apply that concept there, that you don't say at Har Sinai, Gershon Iskaya Kutna Nola Dami, that they have no previous relationships, that because it was a geirus of the klal, that the whole people converted together, so they maintained all of their previous relationships. And also, the ketanim were also included. We'll get, God willing, to the sugya of ger katan. It's also a very practical sugya today. The question of how children become converted into Judaism, very, very significant issue. And it has its complexities, and the Ritva brings up the question of how exactly it happened to those who were Ketanim at Har Sinai. And the Soloveitchik explained that it was a whole different process, that there all of the Jews were converting at once as one national entity. That's different than an individual coming to convert. So individuals have certain differences and certain similarities, that when an individual now wants to join the existing Jewish people, so that perhaps has a different structure than the joint gerus of Maimed Har Sinai, but nonetheless, certain principles emerge as the basic requirements, and that we're going to get into as to what exactly is involved in the process. And we know this much, that Mila and Tefillah and the theoretical carbon are derived from Har Sinai. So now that we get to the question of individuals who are looking to convert. So here's where we need to figure out what exactly is involved conceptually. Is there a mitzvah to convert? And is there a mitzvah on the Jewish people to accept the convert? How exactly do we relate to that idea? Is there an obligation to be mekabel gerim? And is there an obligation to convert in the first place? And you'll find, especially if you got a chance to see some of the Makaris this morning, that we seem to have a complex attitude. We seem to have a combination of different statements in Shas and in Halacha as to how we relate to that. And we know, first off, that we don't proselytize. And that's something that is unique, essentially, about Judaism as a religion, that we don't go seeking converts. And one reason for that, before we get into other details, is that we don't feel like it's necessary, because this is really something that's unique about the Jewish people and the Jewish religion among major world religions, is that we don't believe that you need to be our religion in order to be a good person, in order to merit eternal reward, in order to be righteous. You can be not Jewish and you can be righteous and you can have a chelek l'olam haba also. And in fact, it's easier. You only have Zion mitzvos. So to become a Jew, you have to take on a much more burdensome load. You have to take on the Taryag mitzvos. So not only do we believe that you can be a tzaddik and if you're not Jewish, we believe it's easier to be a tzaddik if you're not Jewish. So we don't necessarily think that we need to save people in that sense, that people will be otherwise condemned unless they are converted to the religion. That's a very major difference between Judaism and other major world religions. So therefore, it's not for any lack of care about humanity, God forbid, we care very much, but we don't believe that it's necessary for the well-being of every human being that they be converted to our religion. So we know that we don't proselytize for that reason. But, as we'll see, there are additional concerns. And one way or another, that's our approach, that we don't go seeking converts. But in addition to that, we find a mixture of attitudes, as you may have seen from some of the Makaris, if you got to see. So what kind of statements do we find in Chazal that seem to give us a little bit of a mixed message? Hi, Solomon?
Shlomo's fine. Either one works.
Okay.
So we saw in Pesachim that Hashem was exiled us so that we would go ahead and get the kind of like the gerim from the outside of the nation.
So it's a very positive statement, right? So there the Gemara is saying that that's something we need for our Shlemos, right? That in order to complete the Jewish people, so we do need the gerim as a part of our picture. So, and that's actually why we were exiled, which something to think about as we approach the 3 weeks. Okay, what else?
We also have the Gemara and Sanhedrin right after, is then we're talking about where Timnah goes and tries to convert, and then she gets rejected from converting, and then she goes and marries Eliphaz and has Amalek, who goes ahead and, you know, causes trouble for the Jewish people for generations. So
yes, that's a very significant...
You shouldn't have rejected her from converting.
Right, so that's a very significant source also, which is agadic, but has great halachic implications as far as how the practice and the attitude is concerned. So clearly there's a major historic ramification. So we have an eternal battle with Amalek, and the Gemara says that actually it's somehow our fault that there's a history there that we're criticized for, that Amalek was descended from Timnah, and that Timnah wanted to convert, again bringing up this question of conversion before Matan Torah. So she came to Avram and to Yitzchak and to Yaakov and seeked to join the Jewish people, and they rejected her. And apparently there's something wrong in what they did there. There's something that brings about a sense of responsibility for this perennial battle that we have with Amalek. This ongoing problem all has its roots in the fact that they were distancing of her, that they were not accepting of Timna, which opens up all kinds of questions. And the Rishonim struggle with this because they need to figure out, what does that mean? Does that mean that we have to be Mekabel all Gerim? Was there something that, you know, presumably here, have to figure out what's going on. Here, Avraham, Asher Nefes, Asher Asa B'charan, and here they clearly were interested in bringing people closer. And Timna, they rejected. There's got to be some reason. Right? They certainly were not just gratuitously sending away people. And yet, there's enough of a space there where they must have had a reason, but it wasn't a good enough reason, or it was too absolute of a rejection. Or, however, we find that spot in the middle of whatever the Gemara is telling us there, that somehow the whole history with Amalek comes from that rejection. And the Rishonim do indeed try to work with what exactly that means. Okay, so those are both sources indicating that we should really be more open and that there is a major value in being welcoming to Geirus. What else do we find? And so we find a few other statements in Shas which seem a little bit less positive. And most often quoted the statement of Rav Chelbo, which you have to figure out what that means, but he has this idea of Kashim Geirim LeYisrael Kisafachas, that somehow he's comparing Geirim to a scab. Have to try to understand what that would mean, as the Rishonim struggle with also. And we also find Gemara talking very strongly, applying a pasuk in Mishle. The Gemara adapts to say, Ra, achara, bad tidings after bad tidings, evil after evil, happens to the Mekabli Gerim, to those who accept the Gerim. You have to figure out, what does that mean? How do you make that work with all the more positive implications that we have? So we seem to have a mixed message from various Gemaras, and we have probably an instinctive approach that we know that, fast forward to today, that we do welcome and embrace the Geirei Tzedek that have moved to come towards the Jewish people. So how do you reconcile these tensions? How do you reconcile these sources? So the Rishonim have a few approaches, and the approaches go in a lot of different directions. So if you saw the Tosfos in Yevamos and the Tosfos in Kiddushin, so the Tosfos in Kiddushin takes this in all kinds of different directions, right? It could mean that some of the Gerim that we've accepted haven't been such assets to the Jewish people, and maybe it depends who we're talking about. Right? And some go in the opposite direction. Tosfos quotes Rabbi Avraham Hager, who says that, no, the reason that it's a problem is because we look bad by comparison. Right? Because, you know, they say the zeal of the converted, right? So the passion of the Ger can be much more intense than those who take it for granted, who are born with it. And the commitment to mitzvos is going to be so strong that it makes everyone else look bad. And then when it comes to judgment, so then we're in trouble because we don't hold up to the same standard. So maybe that's what it means. So those are two extremes in terms of interpreting that. Down the middle is the approach that Tosfos has in Yevamos, which is probably the most practically relevant for us and the most significant distinction, that it depends what we're talking about. That if we're going to go around proselytizing, we're going to go trying to convince people who aren't necessarily self-motivated, we're going to try to convince them to convert, so that's not advisable. Or if somebody comes and they're not necessarily so sincere and we don't do the process to try to assess that, that's when we get into trouble. But when somebody comes of their own initiative and they are motivated and they are committed and they are what we call a Ger Tzedek, so then that's a whole different story. And that's where the positive implications and the positive statements are going to come to the forefront. So a number of approaches in the Rishonim to how you navigate these different sources, but probably that's the most significant distinction, and that's very crucial for us, and that's going to be our topic over the next day or two, also figuring out this process, that it's a major line down the middle, that when you have a Ger Tzedek who is motivated and committed and coming of their own passion, so then Gevaldik, that's the best thing in the world. And when that's not the case, when either we're trying to convince people who aren't so motivated, or people are coming, but they're not necessarily coming with the right motives or commitments, that's when it gets a very different attitude. Tyler?
I didn't get to see the Tosfos in Kedushin. Could I just repeat what Kedushin said over there?
So, yeah, so there, Tosfos has a whole range of possibilities that go from one extreme to the other. You know, either that it means that it's reference to Gerim that haven't been a positive influence or a positive contribution to the Jewish people. Or maybe on the other extreme, the Rebbeinu Avraham HaGer, that said that, no, the reason it's bad is because it makes us look bad. Because they're so good, they're so passionate, that it makes all the non-Gerim look as if they're not really committed. So there's a whole range of interpretations which are going to fit in different contexts. But probably the most relevant distinction for us is that distinction, the Tosfos and Yevamos, that are we talking about people who are sincerely motivated on their own, or are we not? And that's where there is going to be a big difference, and that's going to affect how we accept Gerim. Just to get a little bit into I tell your hand's still up, I can't tell that. So there's a major controversial area, and we'll get into it a little bit more later, but just as it's relevant now to some of these sources. So one of the major controversies today, and it's a significant machlokas with some very real considerations on both sides, is should there be a different attitude in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz? That should we perhaps be more demanding of somebody who is looking to convert in Chutz La'aretz, where they're going to have to be very careful about the context and the environment that they are coming into, while one who is in Eretz Yisrael is within a Jewish nation, within a Jewish environment by definition, hopefully, and therefore maybe that could create a whole different attitude and maybe even a different set of requirements. So that's a great controversy today. It's something that's a very sensitive topic. It's complicated by a lot of realities, and it's not our subject for today. But it's interesting, Rav Gorin, remember Rav Gorin was the chief rabbi, Ashkenazi chief rabbi, about 35 years ago, and somebody who was involved in controversial issues relating to Geiris and other settings. But he expressed a position, there was an article in the journal Tchumen, where you can find this, where he suggests that the differences go back already to the times of the Talmudim, and that he basically understands that one could certainly see differently, but that the negative statements are the attitude of the Talmud Bavli. And the Talmud Yerushalmi has a more positive attitude. So he says, so for example, the Tosfos and Yevamos and the Tosfos and Kedushin, so yeah, they have all kinds of ways to interpret Rav Chalbo and what he could mean, but the literal translation, it sounds pretty discouraging. But on the other hand, those statements aren't in the Talmud Yerushalmi. So he understands that the Bavli is more hesitant and the Yerushalmi is more welcoming. And that's because there's a difference between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. That's in Eretz Yisrael, so it's one context. In Bavel, it's a much more challenging environment in Chutz La'aretz. And he says it's the same machlokas today. That now, all these centuries later, the same question of should there be a different standard and should there be a different attitude in Eretz Yisrael as opposed to Chutz La'aretz. So that's a raging controversy today. And he says it goes back to the Talmudim, it goes back to the Talmuds, that the Talmud Bavli has one attitude and the Talmud Yerushalmi has another attitude. Okay, could be. But in any event, so we know that when a ger is coming with personal motivation and initiative and commitment, so then we are very happy to welcome that individual into the fold. So that's as far as a philosophical attitude. But in technical halachic terms, does that constitute a mitzvah? Is that a chiyuv in the traditional sense? So what would you say? Do you see any sources that indicate that it is or isn't a mitzvah? So if you got to see some of the Gemaras, so the language you could argue on, but there are various indications, not incredibly clear, but there are various indications that there may indeed be a mitzvah. And the one that's highlighted most often, it's kind of a roundabout reference, but the Gemara in Yevamos, in the middle of the Geirus Sugyas, which talks about the whole process of investigating, making sure that indeed this is an individual who rises to the standard of an appropriate ger. So once we've done all that, so then right away we go through the process of conversion, and the Gemara brings up the attitude of shihuye mitzvos lo mishahina, that we don't want to delay mitzvos. Well, apparently it's a mitzvah. I mean, that language is picked up on from some of the later Sfarim as an indication that it must be there's a mitzvah. It must be that there is a actual commandment involved in being mekabel ger, or in going through the process of gerus, which may be a distinction that maybe we'll have to come back to. Shlomo?
So, I didn't actually see it inside, but could it be that the Gemara is saying that we don't want to delay him from performing mitzvot after he converts? Meaning before there's no mitzvah, but when he does convert, that's when the mitzvah is like chal on him. So therefore, if it's chal on him, we don't want to prevent him from doing other mitzvah, not necessarily that there's a mitzvah to convert.
It could be, but if that's the case, it still creates an obligation one way or another, however you characterize that. Right, it means that, okay, so then it's our responsibility as Klal Yisrael to facilitate that. So if you want to call that a mitzvah, you want to call it something else. But it boils down to a religious obligation.
Usually when we say that there's a mitzvah for something, we're saying that there's some sort of source in, you know, Tanakh that goes ahead and says, a pasuk that here there's a mitzvah to convert, there's a mitzvah, you know, Tanayi Basar B'chal, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't know, I haven't seen all the sources, but is there such a pasuk that says go and convert? I don't believe so.
Okay, so that's the central question. And that you've just expressed the feelings of the Tashbet, so we will refer to in a second, but that's the question. So is there a text, is there any pasuk in Chumash that constitutes a mitzvah? So we're working backwards a little bit by looking at Gemaras that sound like there is a mitzvah. But is that really the case? So on the one hand, you have this Gemara in Yevamos. On the other hand, you have another Gemara, for example, the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, if you got a chance to see that. So there, it's talking about Bris Milah and about the brachos on Bris Milah. So in that context, the Gemara says that when you're doing a Milah for a ger, so then there's a bracha v'asher k'rishana mitzvosa v'tzivano l'amalos ager. Now, the exact practice of the bracha is something we'll get to when we talk about Milah. But just as far as the implications of the Gemara right now, so there you have, okay, asher k'rishana mitzvosa v'tzivano, the guy commanded us to give Mila to Ger. And that prompts the question, as the Gemara has in a different context, Heichan Sivanu, right? As Shlomo just asked, where did he command us to do that? And I didn't put this on the Makoros because it would have been confusing, but it's more like the dog that didn't bark, what Tosfos didn't ask. I could have referred you to a Tosfos there, because the Gemara has this bracha for Milas Geirim, and also for Milas Avadim, for the Mila that's given to an Eved. So Tosfos says, yeah, because of the pasuk that says you should give a Mila to an Eved. So what the later Sfarim try to figure out is, okay, but where does the pasuk say you have to give Mila to Geirim? Where is there an obligation? Where is there a mitzvah to be involved in Mila Sager? Is that a mitzvah? So it kind of sounds like it, but where exactly do you find it? So that's a question that's prompted by that Tosfos. And there are some interesting discussions about just how much that's the implication, but that's what it sounds like that Gemara, and maybe that Tosfos, or the Tosfos isn't helping so much, but maybe that Gemara is bringing up. Shlomo? Who's up first? I said, okay.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't that be based on Avraham? Is that Kol Yalid Bayit, that anybody who was born into Avraham's house, whether they were Jewish or not, had to have a Mila? So that's why by an Eved, that would make sense.
Right, so Tosfos says that.
Someone is not actually born into your house, they wouldn't necessarily have a mitzvah to have a Mila.
So that's the question, that the Gemara says it for both, right? The Gemara has a bracha for Gerim and for Avadim. And Tosfos only tells us what you refer to, that, oh, there's a mitzvah for the Avadim. So, but what about the other half of the Gemara? So what about the mitzvah for the Geir? So what do you do with that? And it's interesting, the Dvar Avram has a comment here. The Dvar Avram was the Rav of Kovno, who technically a little bit of Yeshiva University history. He gave smicha to Rav Soloveitchik. That Rav Soloveitchik, when he wanted to leave Europe, so he needed to have some documentation that he was a rabbi. So they went to the Kovna Rav, the Dvar Avram, and he wrote him a letter that said, Halacha kamoso b'chol makom. You can read this letter. It was published in the Sefer Zikaron for Rav Soloveitchik. But Tzvi Harari referred to that as a halachic blank check. So the halacha is like him and everything. So the Dvar Avram, so you say, not so sure where that Gemara really has to say so much, that we have a concept of brachos for a hechsher mitzvah also, for a process. We have a bracha for shechita also, even though we wouldn't necessarily say, if you're not interested in eating meat, that you have an obligation to do shechita. Those of us who are learning chulin this year, Lev, you'll remember that we spent some time trying to figure that out. But the question of the bracha, does that necessarily have to mean there's actually a mitzvah in the sense of an obligation? So others respond to the Dvar Avram. They say, what's the difference? Still Shechita, the Rambam counts as a mitzvah. Geiris, we don't find that the Moneh HaMitzvah is counted at all. Now, Levi will tell you, so that was the Machlokas, whether it should be counted as a mitzvah. The Rambam counted it, the Ravi didn't. But, okay, where exactly does it fit in this whole spectrum? So there's a bracha, is it a mitzvah, is it counted as a mitzvah? It's where we find some debate. Tyler, sorry, you've been up for a while. Your virtual hand must get tired.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's the source that we need to have a pasuk or something from Tanakh to teach us that it's a mitzvah?
Well, if you don't have that, so then what do we have? Right? So how do you know that something is a mitzvah if we don't have a pasuk?
You have the Gemara, I don't know.
So the question is, so if you have a Gemara, so does that make it a din d'oraisa, a din d'rabbanan? If the Gemara is going to tell us something is a mitzvah, and that's essentially where we're coming from now, that here we have some sources that indicate that there is some kind of a mitzvah. So the question is, where's the Gemara getting it from? Is it a mitzvah d'rabbanan? Is it a mitzvah that we understand misvar? Maybe. Right? The Gemara sometimes says that we know something logically, we know something misvara. And it sounds like that has the weight of a din min haTorah, because sometimes the Gemara will say, Lama likra svarahu, why do I even need a pasuk if it's a svara? It's a question whether that means that can actually create a mitzvah, or when you have an existing din, so the rules sometimes we can figure out misvara. So pashtus, you would think we need some kind of a source for it to be a actual mitzvah. But there might be other ways of getting to it, but we have to still figure out what's going to qualify. But on the surface, you would think you would need a pasuk, or at least an inference from a pasuk. And that's something that we have to figure out here. Moshe.
If Geiris is not a mitzvah, would anyone say that it's maybe a hechsher mitzvah?
Maybe, right? So it could be, and that's like the Dvar Avram has an approach along those lines also, right? That maybe you could say that it's something along the way to bringing about mitzvahs. And maybe a bracha makes sense for that also. Maybe you can have a bracha without having an actual mitzvah. But these are among sources that are considered. The Gemara in Yevamos about Shuhi and Mitzvahs Loma Shehinan, this Gemara in Shabbos that has a bracha, these are among the sources that seem to suggest that there is a mitzvah involved. There's also a Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Samach Beis, if you got a chance to see that, it was on the list also, where the Gemara has a statement which has been interpreted as downplaying the mitzvah, although it's a little hard to see why it's so compelling, but some Achronim focused on this Gemara. And the Gemara talks about, let's say you have a non-Jewish man who wants to marry a woman, so he says, Hare at mekudeshesli, so he wants to make the Kiddushin dependent on after he converts. So the Gemara is trying to address whether that's a valid plan or not, that is it in his hands to control this. So it's not necessarily up to him to convert, because the Gemara says, how do we know that you'll find three who are going to agree to be a Bezdin for him? So some of the Achronim note from there that, oh, maybe it sounds like it's not a Chiyuv, because if it was a Chiyuv, so then how could the people refuse? They'd be obligated. So this person should be able to say, I'm confident I can get a Bezdin because they have a mitzvah to do it. So there are some who derive from there that maybe there isn't a mitzvah. It seems like it's a little bit of a difficult inference, because we see here that there is a process, clearly, like we've seen so far, that there is a whole way of trying to ascertain whether somebody is an appropriate candidate or not, and we'll get into that more. So why doesn't the Gemara just mean that maybe the Beis Din will investigate him and decide that he's not a good candidate? Or maybe, whatever, he just won't find people. It's hard to put so much weight on that Gemara as a way of saying that it's not an obligation. And in fact, the Riha Zaken, one of the Rishonim, on that Gemara actually seems like it is a mitzvah, because he notes there that in other contexts, okay, so you don't necessarily need chachma, you don't need to find chachamim. But here, this is a process that's going to require not just any three Jews, but it's going to require a certain kind of Jew, so maybe you won't find the right kind of people. So it's hard to know how much weight to put on that Gemara, how much to deal with that. So we just have a few more minutes. I'll just say a few minutes about this, and then we'll continue this into tomorrow. So if we're continuing this point, so I don't know if we'll send out more makoros. We probably still have makoros from today's sheet to continue. So we'll see. Maybe we'll add a little bit more, and maybe we'll work off of what we still have to do for today. So just to get our toe in the water a little bit about the approaches here. So the implication that you get from these Gemaras is that there likely is some kind of a mitzvah, not necessarily a chiyuv per se, but that there is indeed a mitzvah of some kind. And we're going to have to figure out, this for sure we'll have to spill into tomorrow, so if we say there is a mitzvah, so whose mitzvah is it? Right? Is there a mitzvah on the ger? Is there such a thing? Is there a mitzvah on the ger to convert? And there's another source, which we'll have to discuss more tomorrow, that sounds like that, because the Gemara talks about a Gemara in Psachim. So Yeshiva is learning Psachim next year. So the segue, so we got to talk a little bit about Chulin now, a little bit about the first parak of Psachim. So the first parak of Psachim, on Daf Zayin, so the Gemara has discussion there about brachos over las yaslan, about how you make a bracha before a mitzvah, not after. And the Gemara says that an exception is tevila. Immersion in the mikvah, bracha is afterwards. Because before that, gavra lo chazi, the individual is not fit to make the bracha. So what are we talking about? We're talking about a person's tamei, so he has to go to the mikvah. That's what Rashi sounds like. But Tosfos over there sounds talking about tevilas ger, that he can't make the bracha beforehand because he's not Jewish yet. So only after the conversion is over, so that's when he makes the bracha. So many say, hold on a second. But okay, Jewish, not Jewish. What mitzvah does he have? He has an obligation to do this? Is there a mitzvah on the ger? So that's something we have to figure out also. If there is a mitzvah, so is there a mitzvah on the ger? Is there a mitzvah on the bezdin? Is it both? Is it two separate mitzvahs? So how exactly do we relate to that? That's something that we'll see as somewhat of a question. So is there a mitzvah, and who does the mitzvah apply to? So just for a few more minutes to focus especially on the bezdin. So is there a mitzvah? So the Raiv in the Bali HaNefesh, in Shar HaTfilah, the Raiv says, yeah, there is a mitzvah. And he refers to a pasuk. What pasuk does he refer to? So this is a little bit surprising on the surface because it doesn't sound like it is a tzivui necessarily. And maybe this goes to Tyler's question in a different sense, that even if you do have a pasuk, but the pasuk is not phrased as a commandment, so do we know how to relate to that as a mitzvah? So the pasuk the Ravid refers to is what we said before, as hanefesh asher asu b'chara, which prompts a few questions, right? Because, okay, so apparently what he's getting at is that this is what Avram did, and it's not the way he phrased it, but ma'isa avos simul l'banim, okay, so we follow the paths of the avos, so we should be doing this also. We should be mekabel gerim as well. Now, it's a very tricky reference, because, first of all, was Avram talking about being mekabel gerim to Judaism, or as a ger toshav, like we discussed at the beginning? It becomes important to know what exactly was Avram converting them to. But also, it's especially tricky, because if we assume that we don't proselytize and we're not seeking converts, so presumably that is what Avram was doing. And Avram was involved in kiruv. Avram was involved in outreach and bringing people closer to this. So if we draw a distinction and we say that he was talking about monotheism, he's talking about Shavah Mitzvah B'nai Noach, so that, for sure, we do outreach, right? We believe that you don't have to be Jewish to be a tzaddik, but you do have to fulfill the Zion mitzvahs. So, okay, so Avram was trying to bring people into that. Fine. But if we have the same mitzvah, so then that's not what we do as far as Geirus. We don't seek to encourage people to convert whether they're interested or not. So it's a tricky reference a little bit, but this is what the Ravid records, that there is such an obligation from a nefesh asher asu b'char. Now, the Tashbetz, I mentioned before, to Shlomo's point, he expresses it pretty much like Shlomo said, that Tashbetz writes that there is a mitzvah. Here, shuhi mitzvah shlomo shahina, and the Gemara basically says it black on white, that it's got to be that there is a mitzvah involved in Kabbalah Sker. Question is, what mitzvah? He says, I don't know exactly what pasuk it is. And I don't know why it's not counted as one of the Tariq mitzvahs, because it should be a mitzvah on the list, and it should have a specific source. I don't know which one it's going to be, he says. But it sounds clear from the Gemara that there is a mitzvah involved. So if we have to try to find a source, so what could the source possibly be? And if we need it to be a pasuk somewhere, so what could it be? So there are a few candidates, and these candidates are very important because they say something about the hashkafi here, which is very helpful to us. It says something about the whole philosophy. And among the suggestions, if you look at the commentary of Reruchim Fishel Perlo, to Rav Sajagon. Rav Sajagon Sefer HaMitzvos, we know it's a short poem, but Reuchim Fishel Perlo wrote such an extensive commentary, so it's three huge volumes. So in his commentary to the Rav Sag Sefer HaMitzvos, the Reuchim Fishel Perlo takes on this question. So what is the mitzvah of being Mekabel Geirim? So one possibility that he quotes from the Ria Barcelona is that it's a mitzvah of Avas Ager. We know that the Torah tells us again and again that we're not allowed to be ma'ane ager, we're not allowed to cause any emotional harm. We have to be very, very careful with that. And conversely, we have a mitzvah of Ava. So he suggests that that's what it is. The mitzvah of Ava is that, or includes, that we have to be mekabel the ger. So that's interesting, right? Because they're not a ger yet. So you would think, you would have thought, that if you're not mekabel the ger in the first place, where does the mitzvah of Ava come in? So apparently it's a big chiddush, and I think there are important conceptual implications. We'll probably get to this much later in the Zman, but to mark it here is very interesting, that the suggestion here is that the Avas Ager mitzvah starts already in the pre-Gerus stages and requires the acceptance of the Ger. And the fact is, it's also a Tosfos HaRash. The Tosfos HaRash on that Gemara in Shabbos about the bracha, he essentially says that's why there's a bracha on Lamolos Agerim, because you have a mitzvah of Avas Ager, and if you don't have the meal, if you don't have the process, you don't have any Gerim, how are you going to fulfill the mitzvah of Avas Ager? So that's a very interesting possibility. I think that has certain halachic and hashgafic ramifications. We'll probably get to them much later, but just take note of this now. But there's another important suggestion, which is also very significant. But I realize that we've gone over time from what I said, so, and we have to watch out for the Zoom fatigue. So I'll leave this as a cliffhanger. I just have to decide what's more emotionally painful, to have a cliffhanger, you won't be able to sleep for the next day, or to have a Zoom fatigue. But we'll pick up with this point tomorrow, the other possible suggestion as to what the mitzvah in the Torah could be for being mekabel gerim. So just a very quick recap. So we spoke a little bit about the history of gerus and the Jewish people, about how it's possible there was gerus before Matan Torah. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov themselves were not sure what their status was, but they were involved in some type of outreach, which is significant, and it's Nefes Asher Asu Becharon. And ultimately we get to Har Sinai. Har Sinai for sure is a gerus of the klal, as the Rav explained, which may have been different than a gerus of the individual. But the Gemara does tell us, for whatever differences there are certain halachos which do relate to the gerus of the individual that all come from Har Sinai, and those are the details that we'll get into. And then we try to figure out the question of what the whole relationship is to welcoming gerim. We see different implications and different statements in the Gemara, and the Rishonim taking on the task of resolving them. Probably the most relevant distinction is it's all a question of what kind of ger are we talking about. We're talking about someone who comes with motivation and passion and commitment that is on their own, or are we trying to pressure someone or accept somebody without adequate investigation into that matter? That's probably the most relevant distinction. And we noted Rav Gorin's essay drawing a distinction between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz that he traces back to the Talmud and the Bavli and the Rishalmi. And then we got into the question of, okay, is there a practical mitzvah or not? And we saw some gemaras that sound like it. The gemara that says we shouldn't delay, shuhi mitzvah slom shahinan, and the gemara in Shabbos that says about the bracha on the milah for gerim, it sounds like there is a mitzvah. We got to figure out exactly what the mitzvah is. And we saw that the Ravid says it goes back to this pasuk, avos hanefesh asher asu l'charon, and we got to figure that out, and we'll say more about that tomorrow. And we saw the Tashbat saying, yeah, there clearly is a mitzvah, we just don't know what it is or why it's not listed, but we got to find out where it goes. But there is a mitzvah, and Rav Sajagon's commentary, the Rukum Fashal Perlo's commentary to Rav Sajagon, quoting one possibility from the Ribar Tzaloni, that it's a mitzvah of Avas Ager, which is surprising that that should apply even before the Gerus, but indeed that's what the Tosfos HaResh says as well. And another important possibility that we, God willing, will pick up with tomorrow. So I wish you all a wonderful, safe, and healthy day. Again, please don't hesitate to reach out if you have any questions, if you want to introduce yourself. And hopefully we will be able to make some good progress tomorrow. Okay, wish you all safety and health and happiness. Call to us.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.